Mark chapter 6. How many of you love to be caught in a storm? I mean, the whole idea sounds great, right? Just recently, it's not a storm so much, but on February 4th, Thomas Lee was driving on East Okoboji. I wonder, how many of you have heard of this lake? It's called Lake Okoboji. Did I say it right? Okay, we got like three. Okay, hopefully I said it right. But in Iowa, he was driving on the lake. He was driving in a Jeep. Okay, you can throw the picture up there. And he was attempting to get to his son-in-law's ice fishing shack. And just right there, and I guess that this is kind of a dangerous thing. Well, driving on the ice to me is a dangerous thing. I've never lived in a place where you can drive on the ice. But I guess, you know, they tell people, I for some reason, whatever it is, when you get close to a place where there's like a bridge, you've got to be careful. Anyway, his Jeep just plunged right into, right through the ice and into the water. And thankfully, there was a group of guys, and it's pretty cool because there's a 17-year-old in this story, and this happened just, again, not too long ago, February 4th. There was a group of guys that they were fishing just on the side or nearby. They were ice fishing. One of the guys, he was 17 years old, and he saw this happen, and he took the initiative. In fact, in this whole story, he's the one that kind of took the initiative on this. They saw all of this happen. They came to the Jeep, and the story, it's kind of vague in the way that it's described, but I think it's at the back. They first get to the Jeep in the back, and they see that there's a dog inside. And one of the guys, he takes a pocket knife and starts banging on the back window, tried to open it, and it was locked, and starts banging on the back window. And after a while, they were able to break through. They got this guy's dog out, and somehow they were able to work around, whether it's the guy unlocked the door or however things worked, but they were able to reach the man that was driving the Jeep, who is now down in the water. The depth was somewhere around 4 or 5 feet, and by the time they got to him, the Jeep was pretty much resting on the bottom. And so they reach this man, and he's caught. Somehow his leg is caught between the seat and the center console. And so they're eventually able to get him free. He gets caught another time, and they're able to get him free. It's not too long afterwards that this man who was driving the Jeep is on the ice, and paramedics came, and they're able to save both him and his dog. How many of us, in a story like this, I mean, the fact that this man was seen, and the fact that there were people that were watching what was happening. I don't know that I would personally, I've seen people in places where I live, well, up in Washington in particular, walk out on ice, like where there's a pond, and I would never do something like that. In this situation, someone driving on the ice and breaking through the ice, and I'm so glad, and I'm sure this man is glad, that someone was there to see it happen. Do you know that you and I, in our storms, that we are seen? God sees every detail of every storm that you and I enter. If we were to get the context here of what's happening in the passage, if you remember this last week, Jesus had just taken the loaves and the fishes, and he multiplied them, allowing for the probably somewhere around 20,000 people total that are in the area, allowing them to eat. If you remember, Jesus challenged the disciples. He says, hey, you guys give them something to eat. They didn't know what to do. They started thinking, you know, logically, okay, humanly speaking, how is it that we feed all of these people here? You guys feed them. If you remember the story, Jesus ultimately takes what was available there. Jesus sent the disciples out, hey, go find out how much food we have here. That food was brought back, and Jesus began to multiply the bread and the fish that was brought to him. And yet the Bible tells us something interesting toward the end of this passage, that the disciples at that time, they were hard of heart, and they did not consider the miracle of the loaves and fishes. Now, isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that the disciples who are in so close proximity with Jesus are hard-hearted to the point to where Jesus does probably one of the greatest miracles that he ever does here on this earth as he's ministering. And the disciples who have spent so much time with Jesus completely miss what they see. And so here we get to this story. Jesus, and we'll talk about it here in just a few moments here, but for various reasons, he sends his disciples away and he tells them to get into a boat and to move along. And so in the middle of this storm that they get into on the water, I think about, first of all, the fact that they are seen. And the fact that you and I are seen in our storms. The fact that the disciples are loved. Jesus comes and he shows compassion and he rescues them in that moment. And to know that you and I, in the middle of our storms, we are loved. We are seen, we are loved. And to know this, number three, that God often works in ways that we don't expect. And how many of you, when I say that, you know what I'm talking about? Some burden, some care, concern that you've brought to God. And maybe you have an idea. Maybe you're like me and you're really good. You know how to give God ideas on how to deliver you from the circumstance that you're in. And yet in the end, God does something completely different than what you would expect. Well, that's what we come to here in our story. Notice here in verse number 45, if you are in Mark chapter 6 in verse number 45. And the Bible says this, we've got on the screen here for you if you'd like to look there. Immediately he, Jesus, made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. Now what's interesting is, when the Bible says in verse number 45, he immediately made his disciples get into the boat, the word that's used here is very strong. It's like he urged the disciples to get into the boat. If you remember what we saw in the story this last week, Jesus, after he had multiplied the bread and the fish, the people wanted to take Jesus and make him king. He was in a place where it was known for there to be uprisings, for revolutions to start. And so the people, they see Jesus and what he has done, and they want to take and make him king. The disciples are still thinking very nationalistically at this time. And so Jesus, knowing that the disciples are not up for this temptation, people want to make him king. Hey, yeah, let's do this. Let's, you know. And so Jesus sends them away. The disciples aren't ready. Jesus urges them to get into the boat post-haste. One man said it this way, the 12 were reluctant like children who are having a good time and do not want to get in the car to go home. So Jesus urges them. So they're, you know, getting excited. Hey, you know, the people want to make Jesus king. And Jesus says, all right, guys, just get in the boat and go. Wait, we want to stick around. Just get in the boat and go. And I could just imagine Jesus giving them that little push, pushing them off into the water. Guys, you're not ready for this temptation just yet. You don't understand my purpose in coming and what I have come here to do. So Jesus sends them out. And in sending them out, the disciples are tested. And if you know the story, they come into a storm. Meanwhile, Jesus goes up into a mountain apart to pray. And I find it interesting, if you know this passage, or if you've read through the book of Mark, then you might remember there are three different times where Jesus goes alone to pray. And there are a couple different reasons, couple obvious reasons that Jesus does that. And one of them is Jesus would do that when his disciples don't understand his purpose and what's going on in his ministry. Another time is when the crowds don't understand him and try to take him and make him king. And so Jesus, he goes to the mountain and he wants to have some solitude with his Father to reestablish maybe recommit or to dedicate himself. It shows his dedication to his servanthood to his Father. So he spends time in prayer. Notice with me in verse number 47. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they, the disciples, were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. Have you ever noticed that for the disciples, things just seem to fall apart when Jesus is not there? Have you ever noticed that? So Jesus is missing and things just start falling apart. They're here on the Sea of Galilee, and the Bible tells us in so many words that they're not making much headway. The New English Translation says that they are straining at the oars. And yet, I think about this, that the disciples are in this predicament because Jesus told them to get into the boat and to go to the other side. They are in this predicament because of their obedience. They may have been hard-hearted, but thankfully they obey this very direct command to get into the boat and to go to the other side. Now, I know there's various thoughts here, but it is thought that...
Could you try again?
Sorry, my watch is talking to me. But it's thought that the wind that was contrary to them, that was the opposite direction of where they were trying to go, was probably coming from the northeast. Now, let's throw this map up here real quick. From what I see, can you see that okay? And I don't know how visible that is, but it almost shows like a U-shaped mark up there. It's in orange. And that is thought the path that the disciples were supposed to take, to be the path that the disciples were supposed to take and where they were going. But here's something interesting. The Bible tells us in John 6:19 that they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, which was beyond this little distance here. Matthew tells us that the disciples were in the midst of the sea. They were far from land. And so it's almost as if the disciples were getting farther and farther from their destination the harder they tried and the more that they rowed. That seems to be the case. And how many of us have ever felt like that in life? How many of us, it's like, you know, 2 steps forward and then 57 steps back? You know what I'm talking about? Okay, so you're trying to make headway, and it's like, as you're trying, the harder you're trying, the more behind you're getting. Can I get a witness? Anyone? Okay, teenagers, raise your hand. Oh, come on now. But the harder they're trying. And so here they are. But the fact of the matter is, as we've already mentioned, the disciples are in this predicament because they are obedient. Because they are doing exactly what Jesus has told them to do, here they are in the middle of this situation. Notice with me, if you'd like to take notes, and if you're new with us, the notes for this message are in the bulletin. So if you'd like to follow along, our first point this morning is, an obedient life does not mean a trouble-free life. Sometimes it means the opposite. Sometimes it means the opposite. An obedient life does not mean a trouble-free life. Sometimes it means the opposite. You know, sometimes as Christians, in the middle of our struggle, when we are giving all of our effort, when we are in our minds We are following along with the last command that we heard from Jesus. And yet, that obedience puts us right in the middle of a struggle. I mean, really, what's the deal? And if you're anything like me, it's easy to come to the place in your heart and mind where it's like, God, as far as I know, I'm being obedient to you. And I'm trying and I'm just exerting all kinds of, I'm giving as much effort as I can. God, why is it that things, in whatever area of life, whatever it is, God, why is it that things are going the way that they are going? I don't know if you've ever personally felt like this, but I think it's easy for us as Christians to get this attitude, because I'm obedient, God owes me something. Have you ever sensed that in your own life? Where it's like, okay, God, I'm following you, and now this bill's come in, and I'm like, okay, what do I do? God, as far as I know, I'm being obedient, and then this happens. God, I don't understand. The Bible speaks. Jesus spoke about a group of people who felt just like that. If you know the story of the laborers who were hired to work in a man's field, if you know that story. And this man, this manager, he went out throughout the day and he went to the marketplace where people who were looking to be hired, where they would be. And he went out throughout the day, and even the 11th hour, the last hour of the day, he went out and he got more laborers and he brought them to his field. And at the end of the day, starting with he went through all of those that had been hired. I think it was actually starting with the last, and he paid them all the same. He paid them all the same. And so those that had worked the full day looked and said, wait a second, we've worked the entire day. Why is it that we're getting the same wages as this guy over here? He just got hired. I don't know if you've ever sensed that in your life personally, but I think it's easy to come to where in our obedience, we come to God and say, God, I'm being obedient. Why is it that life is going this way? Notice the statement here by Martin Lloyd-Jones. I think he says it well. Talking about these laborers, he says that they are very conscious of their work. They are very conscious of their work. They are very conscious of what they are doing as they are working. They are, in a sense, keeping an eye upon themselves doing it, looking at their performance, etc. What a terrible thing that is, but are we not all guilty of it? I think it's important for us to recognize, as you and I follow Christ, that any blessing that God brings to us along the way, it's nothing that we deserve. And so any blessing along the way, we don't deserve it because we've been obedient or whatever. It is all of grace. It's all of grace. So the disciples, they are out struggling because of their obedience. Well, sometime during the fourth watch of the night, the book of Mark was written to a Roman audience, so this is kind of a Roman term here. During the fourth watch of the night, the Bible tells us in verse number 48, Jesus comes to the disciples walking on the water. Now, what's interesting is that John tells us that it was almost Passover, meaning this, Passover happens when the moon is full. So Jesus, he's out on, he's on the mountain, he looks out, and the disciples, you know, they're a few miles out, and he looks out, it's a full moon, the wind is contrary, it's going against where they are trying to go, and so the Bible tells us that Jesus goes out to them as they are struggling on the lake. Jesus sees them. Kent Hughes writes, the human tendency during difficulty is to imagine the face of God with blind eyes. But our text teaches just the opposite. Followers of Christ in the storms are special objects of his omniscient, his all-knowing, his compassionate care. He not only sees, but enters the human struggle. And how often during our struggles, it's easy to think, does God even see me? Does God even care? Do you know it doesn't have to be a full moon outside for God to see you where you are, to see you in your struggle? God has not lost your address. He sees you. And I love this picture as Jesus enters into the disciples' struggle in a way that they would never have even imagined. Notice in verse number 48, the Bible tells us, he saw that they were making headway painfully. The wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, the Bible says, again, it's probably somewhere around 3 a.m, he came to them walking on the sea. Now, this whole idea of Jesus walking on the sea, this is such, this is probably one of the first miracles that we think of when we think of Jesus, or one of the first miracles that we hear about. Let me ask you, what would it be like for me and for you to see someone, you know, we're in this storm or whatever, or just on the water? Seeing someone walk on the water is not something you see every day, right? I think it's interesting. There are some skeptics that have tried to come up with various ideas as to how this could have happened. Number one, someone suggested that it was just an optical illusion. Or maybe Jesus is walking on a sandbar. Except this is like out in the middle of the sea, so I don't think that that's possible either. How many of you maybe come across this? Back in 2006, there was a professor at Florida State University that says that Jesus must have just been floating on a thin piece of ice. Has anyone come across that? Now, to me, this is more of a miracle. How many of us have ever walked on ice? Okay, so how about this? How about walking on ice on the water? So to me, if this really happened, then it's even more of a miracle. Okay, so floating on a thin piece of ice, and it only appeared as if Jesus was walking on the water. This man said, unique freezing processes would occasionally have allowed a thin crust of ice to form, a phenomenon he calls springs ice in patches on the Sea of Galilee. But can I just make a suggestion that is more of a step of faith to believe in? Probably takes more faith to believe in that than what we find here in this story. The fact of the matter is that Jesus has done various things to this point to show us that he is God. In fact, if you remember back in chapter 2, you might remember that Jesus forgives sin, something that only Jesus can do. We find that Jesus demonstrated power over nature back in chapter 4 when he calms the sea after coming over across it with the disciples. And now Jesus, he is walking on the water. In fact, the phrase that's used here in the original language, this is the only way that it could be translated. The only way. Jesus is walking on the water. James Edwards said this, Jesus walks where only God can walk. The Bible tells us in Psalm 77, 19, your way was through the sea, your path through the great waters. Your way was through the sea, yet your footprints were unseen. Job 9:8 says, who alone stretched out the heavens and trampled the waves of the sea? And the simple fact is, Jesus in this moment is doing something that only he can do, something the disciples never would have expected, contrary to anyone's imagination regarding what Jesus could do, walking on the sea. James Edwards, notice the statement here. God can do what humanity cannot do. and can never conceive of doing. His wisdom is beyond compare. He moves mountains, shakes the earth, obscures the sun, arrays the heavens in splendor, and treads on the waves of the sea. Walking on the lake identifies Jesus unmistakably with God. And I think the question here is, what's the point? What's the purpose? In other words, is Jesus just doing like this? Is he just kind of showing this raw display of his power to show to show off, to do something cool in front of his disciples? I love how Jesus has a point and a purpose. And can I just tell you this morning, whatever storm, if you've got a storm going on in your life, first of all, know that you are seen and that you are loved. And what we see here, at least for the disciples, is that Jesus coming to them, walking on the water, he does something that they would have never thought in their wildest imagination what Jesus could do, what Jesus would do. And in our storms and in our trials, if we allow him to, and if we are willing to step back and simply to trust him, God will often work in ways that we cannot imagine in our lives as well. Notice here in verse number 48, kind of toward the end, in Mark 6:48, notice that last phrase. It says, he meant to pass by them. He meant to pass by them. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. I wonder why the Bible doesn't further describe, you know, their cry. I don't know if they were screaming like a bunch of little girls. I have no idea. Well, what's interesting is it was thought, the wilderness and the sea, it was thought that it was the dwelling place of demons. But either way, Jesus comes to his disciples walking on the sea, but not just to display his power in raw form. Jesus arrives in compassion. He shows that he is present in the storm. And can we just recognize this morning, no matter what storms we might be going through this morning, Jesus is present in the storm? I mean, do we recognize that? No matter what the challenge might be, no matter how far outside of our ability it might be for us to address the problems that surround us, Jesus is present in our storm. He's present. Now, why is it that we miss Jesus in our storms? I think just like for the disciples, he shows up in ways that we don't expect. And so Jesus says to the disciples, he says, take courage. He says, it's I. And the phrase that he uses here, it brings us back to the Old Testament, because what Jesus says is, in this phrase, he says, I am. I am. And if you know the Old Testament at all, your mind might go back to what God said to Moses in the wilderness when God was calling Moses to go to Pharaoh and to redeem God's people. When Moses asked, okay, who is it that I should say that sent me? And God said, I am. Jesus, when he comes to his disciples, he says, take courage. He says, don't be afraid. He says, it is I, literally, I am. And if we go a little bit further, I find this interesting. The word, when the Bible says that he intended to pass by them, the word that's used here in this passage is the word parerchomai, which is the same word that's used in the Old Testament when the Bible describes God passing by Moses in a theophany. If you remember the story, Moses comes to God and says, God, I need to know that you're with me. God, can I please see your glory? And what does God do? He passes by Moses and reveals his back to Moses. It's the exact same word that's used here. As God shows his glory, his back to Moses. He says, you can't see me face to face. He says, but I'll show you my back. And the word here that's used is the word parerchomai. It's a word to describe a theophany, a temporary physical manifestation of God. So here Jesus comes out of compassion, walking on the sea, something that only God can do. Is this just a raw display of his power? No. Jesus is showing himself to his disciples. I am here. I am present in the middle of your storm. What's interesting is that the word for boat, the early church actually took this word and adopted it and used this very word for boat, the Latin word for boat, the name for the main place that the church would meet, the main building in which they would meet. What do we find here? Jesus walking on the sea, showing this power in an incredible way to show that he is present with his disciples. William Lane notices a statement here. In wonderful fashion, Jesus put his authority at the disposal of the disciples and passed by to assure them of his presence with them. And notice with me, if you're taking notes, God may show up at times in a way that I would have never imagined. That I would have never imagined. Lacey and Kevin, they live in South Carolina. And they're both first responders. And just recently, just a week and a half ago or so, they ordered Domino's pizza. I guess just like we did. They ordered Domino's pizza, and it was delivered by this 73-year-old lady. Her name is Barbara Gillespie. But on the way to the door, Barbara tripped. Again, she's 73 years old. She tripped. She lost her footing, making her way up the porch. You can throw the picture up there. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that okay? So it kind of shows the different frames. This is on their doorbell camera, you know, going up to their house. And so you got to see from the beginning her losing her footing and tripping, and finally her and everything else ending up on the floor. Well, Kevin was already coming to the door, and he rushed to her aid, and the couple has five children, and so the three oldest, they were actually all watching this on the Ring camera. So I can guarantee you this, if you go up to someone's house, you know, they've got a Ring camera, I can guarantee they're watching you, whether or not you realize it. Anyways, I could say that because I have one, but they've got five older, and so the children, they watch this, and their heart just went out to them, and they were, they just felt for the lady. And the wife says this: our kids don't like seeing anyone get hurt. Our four-year-old was extremely concerned. She asked about her every day. Gillespie, the 73-year-old, she's technically retired, but she's, and she's relying on Social Security benefits and all that, and her husband, actually, Lacey, this lady that was going to receive the pizza, her husband, actually, his parents had recently passed away, and they were in financial trouble, and so they were just concerned about this lady who was working and doing this at her age, and so she posted this video on social media, and she set up this GoFundMe account and sent it out to some friends of hers, and she was just thinking, man, it'd be really cool if we could get this lady enough to take, you know, just a few days off of work. And what initially got put out, the very first day, this GoFundMe account raised $50,000. Yesterday morning, it was up to some like $240,000. I think that's kind of cool. Who would know that tripping on someone's porch would get you so much money? And there weren't even attorneys involved in this. And I know what some of you are thinking, like, man, I would trip for something like that. Give me a porch, show me a porch, and I'll dump whatever you want out on it. That's kind of cool. And I would imagine how this circumstance turned out for this lady was probably completely different than what she expected. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going to be in a dilemma and I'm going to trip and someone's going to... That's not the point. The point is that God shows up in ways oftentimes that we could never expect. We're in the middle of our storm, and maybe, just maybe, we miss it. The disciples, for whatever reason, they have hardness of heart. And they initially do not recognize Jesus, who is walking on the boat, who is on the water, who is displaying this power. God often works in ways that we could never imagine. And again, as I told you, I know that I'm good at giving God ideas on how he could intervene in my situation. But how many of us know this? God doesn't need my ideas or yours. You say, well, man, God's never done that for me. I've tripped and fallen, and someone's given me $240,000. And again, that's really not the point. God works in ways that we often do not expect. Notice in verse number 51, here in our passage. And he got into the boat with them. And what's cool, Mark doesn't tell us this, but when Jesus got into the boat was immediately at the shore. Kind of cool. Verse number 51. He got in the boat, the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. And here's the scary thing. Isn't it amazing that you and I, even as disciples, we can have hard hearts? I mean, even if we're in the Bible, if we spend time in prayer, I mean, we could be in a place where in our hearts we are far from Jesus. So Jesus mercifully sends a storm. He mercifully sends a storm. Why? Because there was a greater danger in this time for the disciples, a greater danger than just the storm that was around them, and it was the condition of their heart. So Jesus sends them out into a storm. Ray Stedman, he said this, our Lord had sent them out, he had given them power. They had seen their ministry confirmed and authenticated by the hand of God working through them, but somehow they seemed to miss it all. And why was it that they were hard of heart? I really don't know the exact reason. I think personally, looking at the story this last week, that they were irritated at the people who were around them, and they just wanted a break. For whatever reason, they had hard hearts. And so Jesus sent them into the middle of this storm. And notice with me, number three, storms help me to refocus my attention back on Jesus. What we see happening here in the story, Matthew tells us that when Jesus got into the boat, the disciples worshiped. They worshiped. And what's the answer as you and I are going through the middle of a storm? Here's something that a storm seems to do. A storm reveals to us what's important. And God will often bring a storm into our life to bring our attention back on him. Storms have the ability to bring my attention back on Jesus. I don't know if you're in the middle of a storm right now, but can I just encourage you to know just a few things? Number one, Jesus sees you in the middle of your storm. Number two, Jesus cares about you. And he might not intervene in a way that you and I might expect him to. You say, well, God, I mean, the way that I'm expecting him to work and the way that he's actually working is different. I don't understand this. I don't understand what he's doing. To me, it looks like he's not doing anything. How is it that I can know that Jesus cares about me in the middle of my storm. And the truth is, some 2,000 years ago, Jesus was thrown out into our greatest storm. If you know Matthew's account of this story, you know that this is the time where Jesus comes to the disciples walking on the sea, and then who was it that got out of the boat with Jesus? It's not a trick question. His name was? Peter. And he starts walking, and then he looks at the wind and the waves, and he starts to what? Cries out. Jesus takes him by the hand. They get back in the boat together. What was it that happened 2,000 years ago when Jesus was crying out in the Garden of Gethsemane, "Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." And God the Father rejected the hand of Jesus and pushed him down, and Jesus was drowned for me and for you. How is it that I can know in the middle of the storm that God cares about me? He took my ultimate storm. And so even if God is not working in the way that you and I would want him to, okay, he's not the way that I would expect, the way that I would expect him to work. God's just not showing up in that way. How can I know that he cares? He took the greatest storm for me and for you. And God might not be working in the exact way that we are suggesting that he would. God, if you just do this, this, and this, everything would be okay. And God says, that's not my plan. He's put us in the middle of the storm because there is a danger that is greater, maybe. There's a danger that's greater than the storm, and that is our hearts wandering from him, just like it was for the disciples. I don't know what the reason for the storm is in your life, if you're in the middle of a storm right now. But what I know is that he sees you, he loves you, and there's the proof right there. Sometimes God works in ways that we don't understand because it's not a way that we would expect him to work. Can I just tell you? God has intervened in my life, Jessica's life. And I'm just thinking about the time that we've been married. He has worked in our lives in ways that we would have never expected. I mean, like early in ministry, when we didn't, what's the phrase? You didn't have two pennies to rub together? What's that phrase? Two nickels? Okay, whatever it is. And just financially, and I'm telling you, the way that God worked in our lives, I have a friend, I think I've told you about him in the past. His name is Dennis Fountain. Knew him back in college. And college kids are broke, right? Okay, take my word for it. college kids are broke. And I remember that story that he told me, the family that we knew as well, they're in college. I think they were either in college or getting out of college. But my friend, Dennis, his wife, Hannah, they were praying to God for various things. And it was cool to see God to meet their need. But a friend of ours, a mutual friend of all of ours, came to Dennis at one time. They were giving him stuff and he said, you guys couldn't by chance like use toilet paper, could you? And he brings out some toilet paper. This friend of ours brings out some toilet paper. And my friend Dennis, he starts to cry. He starts to tear up. And evidently, college students were broke and they had been praying, among other things, for toilet paper. I don't know if you've ever prayed for toilet paper. Maybe in the middle of COVID, I don't know. You know, just to be honest, but God provided. And God might show up in ways that we don't expect. If you're anything like me, you're ready to give God ideas, and God says, you can just keep your ideas to yourself. I've got this. And I'm going to sustain you, and I'm going to give you grace. I think about those like Helen Roosevelt, who during her life on the mission field went through horrendous trials. And the way that I would have thought that God would have sustained her was different than how he actually did. God sees you. He loves you. There's the proof. And maybe, just maybe, he's going to work in a way that you and I would not have expected. The disciples, if they had an open heart during the last miracle, they would have been more ready to receive what Jesus did in this circumstance. But their hearts were hardened. But I'm thankful that after all is said and done, here they are. Jesus comes in the boat and they worship. And that's the key. That's the answer. Worship. In God's working, in his works and ways, even when we don't understand it, are we still worshiping the God who is able to do through our circumstances whatever he wants? God help us during the ups and downs of life to keep our eyes on him. Because that's what happened ultimately in this story we find here. And thank God for the ways that he works in our lives, even for the storms that he brings. Let's go ahead and pray. God, we thank you for your goodness and your faithfulness. God, I think about the song that says, he works in ways we cannot see. He will make a way for me. He will be my God, draw me, my guide, draw me closely to his side. God, we thank you that you are actively involved in our lives, the ups and downs and everything in between. God, I pray that you would help us to look to you. Just want to give you a moment here with your heads bowed and eyes closed. I don't know if you're going through some kind of a storm. And maybe here at this time, God would desire you to just spend some time in prayer and spend some time with him. And maybe just bring whatever burdens and cares that you've got on your shoulders to bring them to him. I don't know how he's going to work, but I know that he sees, and I know that he loves. And God's got a plan, even if it's just to sustain you by his grace during this storm. I wonder if you're here this morning, and maybe you don't have a personal relationship with this one who walked on the water. Man, I'd love to take some time and talk to you about that. Jesus came some 2,000 years ago, and he entered our greatest storm, and he was victorious, died on the cross, paid our sin debt, rose again from the grave, declaring victory over the grave. And if you don't have a personal relationship with this one who rose again, we'd love to talk to you about that, how you can have a relationship with him and know that he is your Savior. Jesus cares about us in our storm. What an awesome truth and a great reality to know no matter what we may be facing today.